For the Climate Discussion Nexus, I'm John Robson, with the latest readout video from our free Wednesday Wake Up email newsletter, to which I once again urge you to subscribe, as I urge you to support our work if you're not already a backer. And then I say hola to our viewers in Puerto Rico, which is number 44 on our list of all-time views by jurisdiction, and I nimbly sidestep the sticky political issue of statehood, independence, or the status quo. Mind you, in some ways, it must be nice to be a politician. In what other field can you consistently lose vast sums of money without it denting your prestige or your self-esteem? Sure, you occasionally get a small news item saying, quote, GM Canada said Friday it was temporarily halting production and cutting staff at its Cami plant in Ingersoll, Ontario, because of lower-than-expected demand for its electric delivery vehicles, end quote. But then you can rush in with lavish promises to clean up a mess that you don't mention having caused, and you can get away with it. Instead of buttonholing Ontario Premier Doug Ford or retired with lavish pension Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau to say, why did you dump tens of billions of tax dollars into this industry, claiming you knew it was a surefire winner, and then it folded like a cheap lawn chair 6 months later, the mainstream media helped them duck blame. So you blow a quarter billion here, a quarter billion there, and you feel good about your far-sighted economic wisdom. As we mentioned in March about another collapsed Canadian government EV subsidy to Sweden's Northvolt, then Industry Minister François-Philippe Champagne babbled, quote, what's important is we managed to get Quebec into the automobile industry, end quote. Exactly as if the investment had prospered, not collapsed. Worse, he preened, quote, you're going from a technology that we've been doing for 100 years, and now we're looking at the next 100 years, end quote. Having failed to foresee the next 10 months. So where is he now? Why, he's been promoted to, finance minister, so he can set far bigger piles of cash ablaze without being held to account, making subsidy-seeking firms rub their hands and citizens rub their wallets. In the newsletter, we return to a point we made the week before about how the alarmist position on climate seemed to be disintegrating at all points simultaneously, like the famous one-horse shay, with coal persisting given the failures of wind and solar, endless bad news on EVs, and prediction after prediction about weather flopping onto the rubbish heap of history. Sure, the fabled green energy transition still does have believers, but the audience seems to be dwindling. As Judith Curry just quoted from J.P. Morgan's annual energy report, the sound and fury in spending went nowhere. Quote, after $9 trillion globally over the last decade spent on wind, solar, electric vehicles, energy storage, electrified heat, and power grids, the renewable share of final energy consumption is slowly advancing at 0.3% to 0.6% per year, end quote. And it's also hard to ignore the way that the supposed transition creates a scary geopolitical dependence on communist China for all kinds of minerals, including dysprosium, which means hard to get, named for how hard it was to discover by French chemist Paul-Émile Lecoq de Beaubardin, which means hard to pronounce. As a New York Times Climate Forward piece warned, quote, China supplies more than half of the 50 minerals the U.S. government has deemed critical to national security and the economy, end quote. Moreover, China is buying them up in poor countries, including the Democratic Republic of Congo and Zimbabwe. Talk about neocolonialism. And, as Robert Bryce noted late last year about a Biden rather than Trump administration initiative on this threat, quote, China now dominates supplies of nearly 24 strategic elements on the periodic table, end quote. Strategic for semiconductor manufacture, as well as for the fabled batteries without which this energy transition will remain an economically dangerous fantasy. Okay, Statista burbled, quote, sustainability is no longer an option, it's a competitive advantage. Transparency and CO2 reduction are shaping the future of industrial supply chains, end quote. But even Climate Cosmos recently warned of, quote, how renewable energy is destroying natural habitats, end quote. So, Britain's energy secretary may still think that covering parking lots with solar panels can let you stand up to Moscow and Beijing, but he's in a dwindling band of diehards. He's not alone, though. Robert Bryce also explains why he's giving up on the New York Times for imposing an absurd price increase while turning from the paper of record into a joke. The Times has, he says, scrupulously avoided a proper investigation of the origins of COVID and, quote, hasn't written a word about Michael Mann's embarrassing losses in his defamation case against his critics, end quote, while new-style competitors like Substack are leaving it in the dust where it belongs. And, speaking of the unraveling of alarmism due to the dismal record of its proposed remedies, Bloomberg ran a piece on how the enormous toxic battery fire in Moss Landing, California, was mysteriously triggering opposition to such batteries, even among progressive locals. Oh, and from the elbows-up, credibility-down file, the Canadian province of New Brunswick tries to punish Elon Musk for the egregious sin of trying to make the American government less bloated and inefficient by selling off its once-vaunted Teslas. All 11 of them out of a total government vehicle fleet of over 4,000. That's some electrification program, government leaps into action. And Premier Susan Holt tried to boast that, quote, right now they're sitting in a parking lot not being used, and so its value lost, end quote. Well done, having bought them pre-owned for a bargain basement $82,000 each when they were really worth nothing, saving the planet one laughable, costly, pointless virtue signal at a time. Oh, and that same province is undertaking, quote, a comprehensive review of the province's debt-laden electric utility, end quote, and that same premier says, quote, the status quo is no longer an option, end quote. But neither, apparently, is cheap, reliable energy. Just verbiage. Oh, and speaking of cancelling the Times, we came across a monstrosity in the other Times, the British one that needs no adjectives, fawning over world weather attribution under the misleading headline, quote, who's causing climate change? This expert has the answer, end quote. It's a lavish puff piece with endless fashion magazine-style shots of Frederica Otto, a key founder of WWA, that makes a mockery of real, skeptical journalism by managing never once to mention that anyone has, or even could have, doubts about WWA's scientific hocus-pocus. Instead, the revolt of the elites continues, complete with product placements for NobodysChild.com and Converse.com, plus credit to, quote, hair and makeup, Gia Mills using Skin in Motion, and Sam McKnight, end quote. In a chilly display of journalistic objectivity. Meanwhile, never mind that cool spring. MSN chases clicks, and the thrill they used to get from modest doses of alarmism with, quote, over 150 unprecedented climate disasters struck worldwide in early 2025, end quote. See, a handful of disasters now just leave them vaguely tired and depressed, so they need to keep amping up the dosage, even though it makes for a pathetic spectacle as they desperately seek the next fix. And, we want to say, if Americans increasingly distrust the scientific establishment, it's not because the public have straw in their beards. Maybe some of them do, and it may always have been one less than ideal reason for the traditional habit of regarding eggheads with skepticism. But the increase in such skepticism, the growing tendency to think that much of the research industrial complex is vain, inept, and elitist, is the product of major failings in the world of government science, especially the problem of peer review and the famous and increasingly urgent replication crisis. Here at CDN, we still get some innocent souls who wave peer review at us as though it were a silver bullet that slays error and fraud in a single shot without fail. But in point of fact, this massive edifice erected by academics for academics has failed horribly in its purpose, at least its ostensible purpose, while permitting the publication of endless eye-catching papers that assist multiple authors in getting career advancement and yet more grants without, unfortunately, withstanding real scrutiny on the rare occasions that they get it, including on climate change. It's hard to think of another issue in which prominent results invariably turn out to be more slipshod or just plain wrong. Yeah, except perhaps the government's declaration that carbohydrates were the path to slender fitness in the 1970s, while eggs were white ovals of death and red meat was poison. On these points, the scientific establishment lined up obediently behind political orthodoxy, followed by an explosion of obesity. But on climate change, where's the fearless questioning of government opinions that might justify vast amounts of government money to... hang on there. In the newsletter, we also devote a segment of our Look It Up series to historical extreme weather events. Wait, historical? Didn't the weather always used to be mild and pleasant before the days of SUVs and jet aircraft? No. In fact, there've always been hurricanes and floods and things of that sort, and we have, as people apparently say these days, the receipts. or at least the photos and information from contemporary write-ups from those in the last century or so, along with eyewitness accounts and other evidence from older ones. Including a sample from Francis Carruthers of the Love Exploring website, who assembled a list of extreme weather disasters from 1900 to 2024 that begins with the Galveston storm in Texas in 1900, which left about 10,000 people dead. Then there's the 1909 Paris flood that lasted so long, at 5 months, that it became the 1910 Paris flood. And a deadly blizzard in Washington, D.C. in January 1922 that's called the Knickerbocker Storm because it dumped so much snow, 28 inches, so quickly that the roof of the Knickerbocker Theater collapsed, killing 98 people. And there's the massive Guadalupe hurricane of September 1928 that killed 2,500 people in three countries, and so on and so on. And if any of these tragedies happened today, they'd kill fewer people because we're better prepared and more resilient. But alarmists would definitely blame them on climate change and call it and the devastation that resulted a harbinger of doom, and they'd try to make you believe that such things never happened before. But they did, and you can look it up. In the newsletter, we also bring yet another example of the kludged-together climate models falling apart when confronted with real-world data. In this case, it involves the east-west temperature gradient in the tropical Pacific. You see, it's much warmer in the west, near Indonesia, than it is in the east, near South America, though during an El Niño the temperature difference decreases, while during a La Niña it increases. Also, during an El Niño, the heat tends to move to regions that are less efficient at releasing it into space, which means that the Earth's equilibrium climate sensitivity rises. Yes, really. And that's an important point. The supposedly crucial constant in the climate equations isn't a constant due to simple physics. Instead, it's a complicated variable that's driven by geological factors, among others. Now, many climate scientists think that as the planet warms, we'll have fewer La Niñas and more El Niños, which means even more warming. But a new study by Suk-Yung Lee of Penn State University and colleagues indicates that the data show that the temperature difference is actually rising rather than falling, and, they say, rising greenhouse gases may cause it to rise further still, meaning that the low ECS values from all those studies in our ECS in the Real World series might still be too high. Now, as usual, it's not the last word on the subject. It's just an interesting hypothesis for genuinely curious scientists to explore. But it does mean that the IPCC's current position that they should ignore empirical estimates of ECS because something is going to change in the climate that'll make all the actual evidence up to now wrong, irrelevant, or just double plus on good, doesn't hold water. Not warm seawater, and not any other kind. And finally, from the CO2science.org archive, we produce a study showing that an additional 300 parts per million of CO2 in the air led to a 68% growth boost for Anethum graveolens, also known as dill. So yes, we're in a pickle over climate, but in a good way. For the Climate Discussion Nexus, I'm John Robson, and I try very hard not to waste the money that people kindly send us.